Welcome to The Gathering Resources. The following audio is from our breakout session entitled The Third Third of Life, Preparing for a Fulfilling Retirement. This session is moderated by Mark Roberts and features Rick Hicks and Shauna Schneider.
So good to see you folks. Thank you for being here. This is the...
Front row seats.
Yep. Way to go. You're clearly not Presbyterians because they're all in the back. I am one of those.
I thought it was Baptists in the back.
Really? That too?
All right. It's just any form of religion goes to the back.
Well, welcome. This session is called the... I had it here and then... Wait a minute. Hold on. It's the problem with technology. You know, it's not like paper. It moves. The third third of life, preparing for a fulfilling retirement. So if that's not what you're looking for, you're welcome to stay. Or you can go find the other place.
The cool seminar. You can go to the really good
right,
one.
Right, right. But
I like it.
Thank you for coming and being here. My name is Mark Roberts. I work at Fuller Seminary for the Max DePree Center for Leadership. And one of the things I get to do in my job these days is work a lot with folk who are, as we say, in the third third of life. And that's how I got connected up here. And I get to be the moderator of this panel. In a little bit, I will introduce our other panel members. You know, not long ago, I don't think I gave much thought to what it would be like to be in the third third of life, even though statistically speaking, I entered it about 12 years ago. But you know, I just wasn't thinking about all that. And I don't actually think I would have been excited to talk about flourishing in the third third of life or retirement or anything. Now these days I'm actually thinking about that a lot, and not so much because I myself am thinking about retiring, although that may very well happen at some point, but I am 64 years of age, which means I'm pretty plainly in the third third of life unless I live till 98. If I live till 98, I'm actually in the last year of my second third. But I'm not really counting on that.
Don't roll the dice on that one.
No, not going to do that. But because of my work at Fuller Seminary, and initially I was working in the Max DePree Center for Leadership, and we were serving marketplace leaders, helping them to live their faith in the context of their work. And as I would meet with leaders, especially folk who were late 50s, early 60s, I would often hear something like this from people. They'd say, you know, I know I'm going to have to retire at some point because I'm mentoring some younger people and I'm going to have to get out of their way. But I don't feel like I'm done with my life. I've still got a lot I'd like to do in life. I don't even know how to think about retirement. My church is no help at all. You guys should do something. And I'd say, huh. Interesting. I thank you for sharing that. I hear that sometimes. You know, if we ever got any seed money for that project, we could do it. And that wasn't just an arm twisting thing. I mean, that's how we fund ourselves. And so, you know, for 4 years, people would say, and that was it. And then about a couple of years ago, I had that conversation with a couple from Iowa. And they said, well, we might be interested in giving you that seed money. And so we started talking, and pretty soon they said, yeah, we'd really like to do that. We came up with a plan and started what we're calling our Flourishing in the Third Third of Life initiative. And it has been exciting for me to be involved in this, not only because I'm in this season of life, but because I've come to discover there is tremendous potential and opportunity as we have this conversation. Part of it, the potential, is just demographic potential. Did you know that odds are today in the United States, 10,000 people will turn 65 today. 10,000 people. And that is going to continue, not just today and tomorrow and the next day, but for many years to come, we're going to have more and more people who are in this season of life. And what are they going to do? A whole lot of folk have really not thought much about what they're going to do as they enter the third third of life, as they become retired. You know, some people do financial planning for retirement. A lot of folks really don't even do that. But relatively few think about what is their life going to be. And for those who are Christian, what might God have for me? What might God's call be to me in this season of life? And so as we at the Dupree Center have begun to step into this, I have been excited by the potential, the opportunity, excited to see some people really come alive as they discover God's vision for their life. Sometimes that's very much consistent with where they've been in the past, and it's just the next logical step. Sometimes for folk, it's a really different direction. And it's been wonderful to walk with them and discover with them what God has for them. And so as it turns out, I actually love talking about this stuff. And that's what we're going to do here today. We're going to hear in just a bit from Rick and then from Shauna. And then most of our time is going to be a Q&A. And we're going to talk together about what it means to think in new ways and in God's ways about this season of life. So before I introduce Rick, I'd like to ask just a quick prayer, and then we can jump in. So let's pray. Gracious God, we thank you for the chance to be together here today. And thanks for these folk who have come. Thanks for this amazing gathering, and just for all that happens in this time, and for your work in our lives and relationships, and then through us in the church and in the world. Thanks for this panel and for this conversation. We pray that you would guide and bless, and that we would be attentive to you as we are listening to each other. We pray all this in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen.
Well, I am really pleased to introduce to you Rick Hicks. Rick and I have been friends and colleagues for a long time, since the 80s. Rick was working at college at Forest Home, and he and I ended up working together on a conference there called College Briefing. And so we were a little younger then, and we were working with college-age people who, I was telling Rick, I figured it out that many of the people that we were working with them are now actually in the third of life. Just saying. All right.
It's depressing.
It is. But Rick, after a great stint at Forest Home, has done a number of things. He was president of Operation Mobilization USA, an amazing missions organization. He continues to work with them on issues of governance and coaching their boards. He is now the president of Operating Legacy Foundation and is doing other work as well. Rick is also the author of a book that really speaks to the kinds of things we're talking about here today. His book is called Launch Your Encore, Finding Adventure and Purpose in Life. And Rick has a lot to share. So Rick, thanks for being a part of this, and let's have at it, man.
Okay, well, I get to spearhead this thing, and I'm gonna kind of probably screw it all up, and then these guys will fix it. So we'll start off here. And I did write this book on kind of retirement, but it's how not to retire. And we were actually gonna call the book Retirement's a Four-Letter Word, but our Christian publisher didn't think that's a very good title. And the idea is we're not talking about retirement. We're talking about when you quit doing the main thing, you may have 30 years of your life left. And what are you going to do with this encore? And how are you going to kind of parlay what you knew from your past experience and life and everything and your failures and your successes into what do you want to do for the last 20 to 30 years of your life? Which, by the way, those of us that, and some of you are already in that well into it, can be the most significant and the most impactful time of your whole life. So if you kind of retire and you're the smartest person on your street, but you have no way to use that and that experience, it just like goes to waste. So the idea is let's kind of take a look at this and let's have a strategy. Now, many of you are down that road and you've just kind of done it intuitively and you're probably doing just fine. But my book and this seminar and this topic is let's take it from being kind of intuitive to being intentional. What if we actually had a plan for this? So when you think you want to grow up and be a doctor or a lawyer or Indian chief or whatever you're going to be, you might go to college for 4 years, 6 years, 8 years. How many years did you go to college? 12? So you might spend all this time
you're including med school, right? Yeah, not just
she went to
college.
Med school. She was a dermatologist. So you might spend all this time preparing for a career that might last 40 years. And then when it comes to this last 30 years, we spend almost no time preparing for that. And so many people kind of fail because they didn't know it was a thing. And it is a thing. So it's a stage of life. And why even talk about this stuff? Because it's actually a stage of life. Now, my doctorate work was in lifespan development, so looking at different stages of life. And when you look at a stage of life, it started off that there used to just be childhood and adulthood. And then around 1905, a guy named G. Stanley Hall comes up and says, hey, you know, these kids these days they're staying at home longer and they don't have to work like when they're 12. And there's another stage of life, and they called it adolescence. Well, we accept adolescence. Everybody knows that. Of course, our thing today is prolonged adolescence. You want to stay until you're 40. But that's not the stage of life. But now they're realizing that used to be people that worked, and then they stopped working when they died, or shortly before. And so there was no stage of life there. Well, now people stop working. They have health. They may or may not have money. That's a whole different strategy. But there's all this time left. And so there's actually now a stage of life, and some of us are calling it elderlescence. And so it is a stage of life. And in each stage of life, we have these developmental tasks to do. And in this stage of life, in elderlescence, we have tasks to do. One of the main tasks I would submit would be to pass down what you know to the following generation. And a lot of people, when I say, share your wisdom, they kind of go, I don't really have anything to share. I just kind of do this and I do that. And I go, well, here, just share your failures. And now, if I ask this whole room, how many of you are like the best at what you do and you're an absolute success and life is awesome and nobody is as good as you? How many would raise your hands? Well, not many. But if I say, how many of you just like really screwed up all kinds of stuff? You had relationships, you had jobs, kids. Hey, how many of you failed at all that? Then everybody's going to put their hand up. If we just share our failures, we can help this next generation not to do those stupid things that we did. And you do that enough, and by the way, then probably a couple of things, it's like, well, maybe I did a couple of things right, but we can pass all that on. So that's why we talk about this thing. It's a stage of life, and we really have some kind of tasks to perform. And if you, by the way, you'll get this book. There's a book signing tomorrow, and everybody gets a free book if they want it. And if you don't really like the way this goes, then you don't really have to pick up the book. So that's the whole idea of where we are in our life and how that works. That's what we want to talk about. If you kind of go into your encore, there is no exact age on this thing. Some people start thinking of this like around 55. I have found people, it's like the same thing that why a salmon knows it's time to go upstream and lay the eggs in and die. That's probably not a good analogy. but they go upstream. Let's do that part of it. It's like around 55, a lot of us are saying, I probably have more years behind me than I have in front of me.
Yeah.
So what's going to make this thing, how am I going to end well? So this isn't talking about just necessarily ending your job or your profession. Well, it's like, how am I going to end these next 20, 30 years? And people start thinking about that. And that's the being intentional. And what could you do? And it's not one and done. It's not, well, I used to do this and I'm going to try that. You can begin to experiment with maybe you want to be on boards. Maybe you actually want to get off boards. Maybe you want to volunteer at a hospital. Maybe if you're like a golfer like me, say, you know what I really like to do? Man, I want to go be a marshal at a really good golf course. And I can hang out with people all day long, make a buck or two, which you don't make much, and play golf. It's like what you start experimenting with those kinds of things that you want to do in your encore. And by the time you're ready for your encore, you've tried two or three or four things, and it's like, oh, I think I want to fill my life up with this. So the whole idea is to think about it ahead of time, deal with it, do it. What does an encore look like? For me, I think the best example, when I was starting to think through all this thing, and the book that I wrote with Hans Finzel, he was the president of World Venture, and he was stepping down from his president role, and I was stepping down from the president of OMUSA role, and so we just both kind of journaled our experience and what we know and things that I'd been speaking on for years, and we kind of came up with it. So the whole idea is just to find a path on how you can do what it is that you want to do. And so I think at that time I was rereading The Old Man and the Sea. Now, there are just some classic stuff out there. If you haven't read The Old Man and the Sea in, say, 20 years, you just need to go back and read it. Well, and it could be The Old Woman and the Sea, if you want to be called an old woman. But it's this great story about a person that's kind of at the end of life and nobody thinks there's meaning there. This guy says, you know what, I still got a little gas in the tank here. I'm ready to go. And it's like, I want to still do something. For me, probably the best example of what kind of the non-core could look like, and I don't know if any of you are Tolkien fans, but Gandalf. Gandalf's the guy. And I love Gandalf, but I love Gandalf the White, not Gandalf the Gray. So if you're still working and you're doing the day-to-day thing and you're doing the budgets and the strategic plans and the performance appraisals, I just hate that stuff. So that's what Gandalf the Gray does. He has the command and control. You're in charge. You do your thing. But then what happens to Gandalf? You know, he kind of falls into the fiery pit, comes back as Gandalf the White. Now, he's not in charge of anything anymore. And he comes back and says, Frodo, you got this, dude. I know how this all ends, by the way. And I wouldn't go through that mountain. I'd go around that one. And he's there. You're giving advice. You're helping. You're giving input. You're letting other people be the command and control. And you're the advisor. And you might have multiple people that you're advising or building into. So those are just some of the kinds of things. That's just kind of, we're going to get into questions and answers, how it might relate to you. But that's kind of a generic thing. I would close with saying, if you want to plan your encore, I highly recommend that you get someone to hold you accountable to whatever kind of experiment you want to look into. Get a coach. There are a number of people that coach people in their retirement, in what they do, in their encore, finding what it is. A little bit of accountability goes a long, long way. And then you just kind of live it out, and sometimes you do that cycle all over again. But get someone to help you walk through it. And right after this workshop, there's a little peer group meeting. If any of you want any further input or want to meet together as a peer group, we're going to all meet. Oh, and there's my time. I'm up. So get a coach. Amen. I'm out.
Awesome. Look out. Thanks, Rick. That's so good. You want to do a strategic plan after this?
Just kidding. I did that for way too many years.
So I first got to know Shauna Schneider through my work at the Dupree Center, in that she was really involved with this thing down in San Diego called Flourish San Diego, and they had me down to speak at some things, and we just got to know each other, and I didn't know anything about her background. I just knew, here's this super sharp woman who's got some really deep and important views about discipleship and living out your faith and vocation and doing it in a way that really impacts the city. Now, I had no idea at the time that she was a medical doctor, dermatologist, had sort of had one career, had done this whole reorientation, helped found Flourish San Diego, and you know, and I got to know that. I thought, wow, she's not only pretty awesome, but actually has a whole life behind her, and it's been really interesting to get to know her that way. And then I heard that we were going to be on this panel together. Well, this is really cool. And so I just can commend her to you as somebody who has tremendous amount of wisdom and who's really living an amazing encore too, a really exciting encore. So Shauna, thank you for being here and sharing with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm much more comfortable one-on-one conversations, but I'm really honored to be here and look forward to sharing some things for you. Retirement for me was kind of an intuitive thing. I like what Rick said about that. I've been retired about 9 years. I'm 65. I retired in my mid-50s. And I think looking back, I do have some things I'd like to share with you that would be tools that you could use going forward. So think about it that way. What happened to me is that while I was experiencing some burnout in my medical practice, which is common for physicians, I think, in their mid-50s, I got involved in a group at our church that was teaching about vocation and calling. Vocation being a big word, responding to the voice of the Lord, that the root word of vocation is actually voice. And I started to do some reading and some studying. I had been in a church all my life, but I hadn't ever really made the commitment to surrender to Christ in the ways that we need to as Christians to really integrate Him into our lives. And suddenly I started reading, and I had a moment in a summer in 2011 where I someone had recommended Divine Conspiracy by Dallas Willard. And reading that book that summer, it completely changed my life. The tangible presence of the kingdom of God, the fact that God wanted to grow us to be the person that we were originally created to be through a relationship with Jesus. And I said, wow, more people need to understand this. And if I had had this integrated idea in my profession, I really believe I would have had a different experience with burnout and some of the things that I struggled with. But God really called me at that point to leave medicine and to really start studying this deeply. And it's been an amazing experience for me. The book, I brought a few books that are I'm going to share with you just to kind of give you some tools, I guess. And then the things that happened to me is that I started to lead a more reflective life. So I'd like to give you that word. I think retirement is a kind of a hinge point for a lot of people where you have the opportunity to start reflecting on yourself a little. And even I know myself so much better now than I did 10 years ago. The other word I'd like to give is relationship. Paying attention to your relationships in your life. It's a great opportunity during a time in a season when things might be slowing down. And if you've done this work of reflecting and allowing the Lord to heal some of the brokenness inside, relationships really start to flourish. And I have a particularly tense relationship with my own mother, and through the work that I've done, she's not a believer. She wants to be around me more now. She's 90, but we have these great conversations. Mm-hmm. So these amazing things that can happen, even during this third of life, where the changes in me and the changes in my understanding of myself have had great implications even in my family. My husband's here, Phil, and we communicate much better now, I'll tell you. So, and then I think that the other part of retirement is that you have the opportunity to really look at what are my resources and what are my responsibilities. So those would be the other two words I would give you is you can be really thoughtful. And I think for me, it's just been the most amazing, rich time in my life. I feel the Lord's led me to the place I am now. I got involved with starting this nonprofit, which was also teaching in church settings about vocation and calling, helping churches turn outward toward their cities so that they were less concerned about preserving themselves and more outwardly looking into the city and loving their cities. And it's been a time that I don't think it has to just start at retirement. These kinds of hinge moments that can happen in your lives where you intentionally have reflective time, you intentionally get to know yourself better, intentionally think, okay, well, what are the unique things that God's given me that are an ache in my heart that's for the good of the world? And so for me personally, I love seeing a spark in someone that will help them thrive. And in the medical field, that was a very comfortable place for me. But then now that I've taken the deeper dive with my own faith, there are so many Christians that are seeking a deeper understanding of that deeper magic of what is it like to actually hear the nudge of the Lord? What does his kind voice actually sound like? And it's a very unique individual thing for each person. So, so I just think, you know, I would encourage all of you to be excited about the third. And I don't know how am I doing time wise.
You're doing great.
Okay.
You could even talk about your books.
Yeah. So I thought I'd share three books with you that were really helpful for me, and not everybody is a Dallas Willard fan. I certainly am, but he's a deep writer. But his book Renovation of the Heart, Putting on the Character of Christ, is just was very foundational for me going through this and understanding the places where my will was creating my own kingdom that was keeping me from really walking with the Lord. And he teaches just great things out of this book. The second one that I think is much easier to read and really has been a beautiful thing I've used in teaching and use it with other folks who are interested in getting to know themselves better, it's called The Gift of Being Yourself. by David Benner, The Sacred Call to Self-Discovery. And through this, I think you can actually get a sense, if you're in these hinge moments in life, of who you are and how God's created you to do these special jobs he has for each of us in the world. And then I think the leaning into this, the last two R's of resources and responsibilities, a good friend, and I know Mark knows Steve Garber. I don't know if any of you have met him. I think he's been to the gathering before. He's written a beautiful book called Visions of Vocation, and it's written stories of people who have kind of thought about the aches in the world and the passions in their heart and who they are created to be, and it's called Common Grace for the Common Good. So those would be my gifts to you, and look forward to questions later. So thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So according to plan, I'm supposed to ask the first question and then we'll tee it up with folk. And we haven't rehearsed this, so this is, if you don't like this question, I'm sorry, but Rick, you made me think of it. And when you were talking about sharing of our failures, I mentioned that there's a couple that is funding our work, and they're actually associated with the Vermeer Corporation in Iowa. Now, if any of you like do tree chippers or big heavy equipment, you know Vermeer. They make some of the best of that kind of stuff in the world. And so I went to visit with this couple to talk about their support of the Dupree Center, and they were very excited to give me a tour of Vermeer, which I was very excited too, because I love like tools and big stuff, and it was just awesome. But my favorite part of the whole tour, so they have not only their warehouses and their big facilities and all this, but they have a kind of like a museum of the company. And if you've been to a lot of big companies, you know, they have the company museum where it's all the history and all the cool stuff they've made. And they have this huge wall. It was like half the size of this whole wall. And I said, what's that wall? She said, oh, that's our failure wall. So what do you mean? That's all the stuff we've done that didn't work. And literally, they displayed it on the wall, including the failures of the founder. It was his idea to put up the failure wall. I thought, oh my gosh. You know, it's one thing to talk about failure, and it's another thing to like actually do it. Okay, so my question for you folk, if you wanted to, as you've moved into this third of life, is there anything that you've tried or didn't try, any failures in the third that you'd like to share so that we can learn from you and not do them? I told you I'm putting you on the spot.
Do you have one in mind? I do.
But no, go ahead.
You go first.
No, I don't have one. I'm still thinking.
You think. Well, uh-huh. Yeah, when I stepped down from being the president of OM, I'd been it for 14 years, and I wasn't like tired. I had a lot of gas in the tank, but I'd kind of given them everything I had. It's like, so if I stay in the role, they're just going to get the same stuff, you know, 2.0. And so I just said, no one's pressuring me. I'm just going to step down. I had a young guy from Northern Ireland that I was mentoring. Been mentoring him for 7 years. I turn it over to him, and the board did it, but I did it. And so he takes over, and I just kind of thought, all right, man, this is my idea. This is smooth. It's going to work. It's awesome. And then I just like felt horrible. It's like, oh my gosh, this guy's dismantling the stuff I did, which needed to be dismantled, by the way. And I wasn't ready for the pain of not being the big dog. And I stayed in the office. So I had to see it every day. Now I'm still like, in a way, this guy's boss through another role that I had in the organization, but I just wasn't ready for not being in charge. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't an ego thing, it was just simply, I don't get to make decisions anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like just a nummy in an office by the mm-hmm. broom closet. Wasn't ready for that. Mm-hmm. And it took me probably 2 years to process. Now, nobody else knew it. I mean, I didn't go whine to them. It's like, let me make more decisions. But that's what didn't realize stepping away. If you really step away, you're away. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thanks mm-hmm. for sharing that.
What comes to mind, I don't know if you would use the word failure, but maybe a blindness about it. What I understand about myself now that I had just really come to know well over the last 5 or 6 years is that part of my coping of feeling loved and feeling fulfilled was to be frenetically helpful to other people. Mm. And my mind would continually fill with that frenetic helpfulness. And it kept me from being present with my children in ways that they can actually articulate to me now that I'm different with them. But when in the retirement stage, when I retired from medicine, which of course is easy to see, you're being frenetically helpful, that freneticness transferred to the nonprofit that I was starting. And so it took some time for me to see that I was still projecting the same kind of coping onto something else. And it wasn't until I sought some inner healing and worked with a therapist that really, really helped me to heal some of the reasons that I was doing that, that I started to settle. And I'm actually not quite as involved in the nonprofit anymore. And I've put some disciplines in my life. It's really important for me, I know, to be alone for periods of time during the week, and just to really spend time in kind of silence and solitude. And I've done some of that. And my adult daughter, we're expecting in the next week or two a grandbaby, she says to me, she says, "Mom, you are present with me now that you never were before." Yeah. And so I'm really grateful for the blind spot that is finally gone. But I did transfer that ache that I had in my heart to something else.
Wow. Thank you both. Yeah, I bet many of us can relate to the things you're sharing there, so that's great. Your turn. What would you like to ask or comment on or whatever? Yes, sir.
I'd like to know, based on your description of not being prepared, how you could have done it better.
That's a good question. That's a very good question. And I think to know that it exists, to think that there's this kind of altruistic value of me kind of given up and given to the next generation, that all sounded good. It was good. But to know there are things of the job I liked. There's some of the things I didn't know, more strategic plans and budgets and perform, but there were things that I did like. And just when I coach people now, I bring this up and say, now you can celebrate what you're going to leave behind, but and you have to make a transition for what you don't want to leave behind. You have to transition everything. In the book here, we have a whole chapter on just dealing with transitions, and I didn't think to begin to transition on that till I already felt the pain. So to know it's a thing, to know you're going to miss some things and celebrate mm-hmm. some things. Mm. Just to know that. So now you all know that. You don't have to go through that. Mm. Or you have to be intentional about processing it. But the whole idea of transitions, and William Bridges and his stuff on transitions, and we kind of do a mini recap in the book here on that. But I could have transitioned better. Yep. I could have transitioned. I didn't. I just cold cut.
You have a thought to add?
Yeah, I think what I didn't expect in my I was a dermatologist, and in dermatology there's a lot of working with my hands, and intellectually I transferred a lot of my caring to discipleship, but I wasn't doing anything that where I worked with my hands. And so I do think there are going to be things that you didn't realize you would miss in a way too. Exactly right. It's going to happen. There are going to be things, but I do think the process of grief and the process of loss is part of our walk. And so to have community where we can talk about that, have others around us who know we're going through a transition, and just being able to share how we're feeling, there that creates an intimacy in the community with the people we're around, and it also helps us grow. So
thanks.
I would reiterate, if you're not familiar with Bridges' book on transition, and we're all going through transitions in lots of different levels all of our life, it's just such a good, clear process of how to really deal with transitions, be it the loss of a loved one or the selling of a company or the kid moving out of the house or these major life transitions. Mm. And there is an actual healthy way to process transitions, and that book really helps with
it. What's the name of the book?
It's called Transitions, by Bridges. Isn't that a great
book? Oh, really? Either that or
William
Bridges,
by Trenton. Transitions, Making Sense Out of Life's Changes.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to read the whole book, you got a chapter in here that condenses
so
it.
Yeah.
It's William Bridges.
Yes, I know.
It's people get confused. So it's Transitions, Making Sense Out of Life's Changes by William Bridges.
You know, Rick, your comment about that. As I mentioned, I'm not retired and don't see it anywhere near, but I recently made a fairly significant job transition. I'd been executive director of the Dupree Center. I'd hired and was mentoring someone who worked under me. And it, for a variety of reasons, it just really struck me about a year ago that it was time for a transition and that I should step down and she should be promoted. And we did that, and she's awesome. She's now my boss. You don't very often get to, you know, sort of hire and raise up your boss. But we were in this, it wasn't even an argument, it was in the summer, and we were disagreeing on something that was more in my turf. And it, again, we were doing fine with it, and we were kind of working it through. And I stumbled across this passage in the Old Testament about the Levites and how the Levites are basically, the Levites were supposed to work from 25 to 50. It's the only thing in the Bible that is like retirement. But the Levites work from 25 to 50. But then there's a statement, the Levites shouldn't do the work anymore, but they can support their brothers. And as I'm reading that, I mean, God, you're talking about hearing God's voice. It was like God spoke to me big time. Like, your job now is to support Michaela. Mm. Like, you gotta just lose this, right? And it was like, oh, Lord, that's really hard. But I really felt struck. So I got back to her and said, you know what? We'll go with what you want. And it was hard to do that.
Yeah.
It was hard to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think in that moment, that was really what God wanted for me. Mm-hmm. But there was a loss in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it also felt good to say, no, I'm really here for you. So other questions or comments, things you want to talk about? Yes.
Sometimes you need to do someone else's thing, even though you're in that category.
Right.
But it's a need. It just has to be done.
Yeah.
And, well, frankly, that's kind of where I am.
Right.
And I see it as, you know, well, a God thing, and that He will give me a way to deal with this. But it's difficult. It really is. It is not your natural gift.
Oh.
But you feel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That responsibility, mm-hmm. that responsibility, mm-hmm. gene, you want to, you know, do what's right by what you're doing.
So really sensing that God is calling you to do something that isn't as easy for you or as natural to you, you really have to trust Him with that.
Well, not only God called me, my deceased husband.
Oh, okay. Well, that.
I don't want to manage from the grave. Here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
And I, you know, mm-hmm. I was well into the third.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you want to say?
Well, I think of it. I have a quote from Oswald Chambers on my desk that says, I think I can say it right, God doesn't call us to do things that we're naturally equipped to do, but He calls us to do things that by His grace we're uniquely capable of. Because of His grace in our lives, and
he'd
so
never call you if there weren't a way to get
and you're, you know, for example, what, you know, you're in a unique position. No one else can do the job that you're being called to do.
Huh.
So, I mean, that happens, and a lot of times those jobs are hard.
Yeah. So, another third related comment. There's a lot of literature and scientific study on this. One of the best things you can do for your brain is stuff that you don't find easy to do. In other words, learn a new thing, you know, take piano lessons if you never did. Do the things that are really stretching you. That's actually one of the best things you can do to keep your brain strong and growing and healthy as you get older. So I know that probably wasn't Bob's plan for your life, but actually that's a good thing. And for all of us, you know, do something that is stretching, something makes you feel uncomfortable. It doesn't have to be awful, Although if you've ever tried to learn an instrument when you're older in life, it's kind of tricky. But those things, learn a language, those things.
So she's got the 5 minutes.
Can I make a comment to that? Let me be the disruptor here, because that what they're saying is totally valid, and they're going to be more common sense. Another approach to look at this is, if there are things you're being called on to do and you simply don't do them well and you don't find the joy of the Lord in it, sometimes we can farm those things to other people.
Yeah,
and I don't mean that in a negative sense. And now, so our common bond here is Peter Drucker. So Peter was one of my professors. Peter made this comment, and I use this all the time. I do a lot of temperament testing and try to get people into the, you know, little categories and all that silly stuff. Peter made this comment. He says, all work is meant to be done in teams so you can focus on your strengths and your weaknesses become irrelevant. To me, that is like the golden statement, like, because I have so many weaknesses, I can farm things out. But it's really important to say, you do what you do well, and those things that you don't do well, bring somebody else around you that actually is called, empowered, finds joy in doing, and probably going to do a heck of a lot better than we would do in our weakness. So that's just another way to look at it. And you get somebody that really finds joy in what they're doing, you're going to probably see more success than us pounding through and not doing well. So that's just another way to look at it.
Good way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And if you have the words of Peter Drucker to refute that, then you're a
good
driver.
Yeah.
And it's not even just board people, though. It's just people to do day-to-day tasks and represent. And maybe say there's a lot of stuff to do, and we can talk later. But that's
awesome.
Somebody's
yeah, we got a comment, question.
Yeah. You're working your way up. So, like your 70s, you're actually, so your self reported happiness is higher than it's ever been. So, that's not a narrative that you see.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you go, pick up a birthday card for a friend, like that's ageism in capital letters, bold and flashing. So, I just think people need to be aware of how much the predominant messages make you seem relevant.
Great comment, great question. That'll be the last question. Mm-hmm. I'll give each of you a shot.
I'll take the first shot, and then you can do the real shot because you did it.
Well, and you got a husband in
he's
the
right
room
here.
Too.
Yeah. So.
But basically, in our book, we actually talk about when you're becoming intentional on this, that you don't just do for the one person. You sit together and say, if you're going to do X, what does that mean for me? And that it's I'm helping a church right now that the founding pastor is leaving. And I said, and we've got this strategy. I said, you can't stop here. What does it mean for his wife, who in fact leads the women's ministry, does Bible study? And so you just are intentional enough to say, this is not a single discussion. This is a dual discussion. And there's horse trading like anything in any of our marriages. It's like there's give and take, and you're gonna win some and you're gonna lose some, but you're gonna come up with an agreed goal.
Awesome.
Yeah, I would say, well, I truly have seen in my life that God gives us relationships, especially our closest relationships, for our good and for our own humility, which the humble are in, right, and the proud are out. And so I think in that process of retirement and change, we've both been in the big swings of it, each of us at different times. I think we've learned through that it wasn't easy always, but that learning how to communicate and learning how to talk about it, share about it, care what the other person is experiencing. God does amazing things in those spaces, I think, with relationship.
Wonderful. Well, let me just add one thing by way of closing. Harvard Study of Adult Development studied a whole bunch of people throughout their whole life, 70 plus years, asking the question, what is it to live a good life? And in one of the questions, big questions, what do you do in your life that'll make it so that when you're older, you're still living a good life? And they studied all this stuff, medical and psychological and all this. The bottom line they came to, and this the last two directors have both said, that the most important thing you can do in your life if you want to live well, and especially when you're old, is have good relationships. Mm-hmm. That is the most important thing. So even there are some of you here who aren't anywhere near the third, but you can right now build into your life the quality relationships that'll make a difference right now,
yes,
but it'll make an even bigger difference down there. So anyway, Rick, Shauna, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was great
to
have your input.